welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader.
And Cap is getting the team back together. Well, she's not getting the team back together. They haven't been together for, well, they've all been locked up in jail, but he's putting together the Howling Commandos. But speaking of Howling Commandos, Hal, what,
was there a bad pun in there? Is this the Howling Commandos?
The Howling Commandos. The Halbert Commandos, maybe. I don't know.
Halbert Commandos.
Well, tell us all about 62.
Minute 62. And so this is the punchline from the end of the last minute. So if you've been holding your breath, here we go. Jim replies to Dugan, who questioned his Japanese ancestry. I'm from Fresno, Ace. Steve scans the group, urgent. Is there anybody else? I'm looking for a Sergeant James Barnes. Pinky replies grimly. There's an isolation ward in the factory, but no one's ever come back from it. Steve nods. All right, the tree line is northwest, 80 yards past the gate. Get out fast and give them hell. I'll meet you guys in the clearing with anybody else I find. Gabe, skeptical, steps forward. Wait, you know what you're doing? Steve flashes a determined grin. Yeah, I've knocked out Adolf Hitler over 200 times. The 107th troops puzzle over that claim as Steve sprints off, disappearing into the factory's depths. The 107th soldiers scramble into the factory yard, punching their way through surprised Hydra guards. One of the 107th snatches a futuristic weapon from a downed Hydra guard. Jim raises an eyebrow. You know how to use that thing? The soldier fires, obliterating a nearby crate in a burst of blue energy. Okay, Jim mutters, impressed. Deep in the factory control room, Johann Schmidt squints at a video screen. What is happening? He says, watching the 107th troops gaining ground.
Now, I've got a question that I'm not exactly sure I understand in this movie. When has Bucky's been taken away and he's gone to an isolation ward. Now, did he get the Schmidt super soldier serum at that point, or does he get it after they dig him out of the frozen river in minutes to come?
Oh, that's a great question. I assume it was after they pulled him out of the river, but maybe that's how he survived falling into the frozen river. But he doesn't exhibit any super soldier tendencies before then.
Right. But maybe it takes a while for it to sink in for him because he doesn't have Vita rays, and maybe it's something like adrenaline that pumps him up.
That's true. Remember, this is kind of the poor man's serum over here with that's not as polished and perfected as you said with the Vita rays that Steve had.
It never occurred to me, but that does answer the question of why they would bother with Bucky. Why, you know, he's just another soldier who falls off a train. Why did they go get him and bring him back and turn him into the Winter Soldier? They may have done so because the experiment wasn't done yet. Maybe it was half done, half baked.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously tried it with other people because he says no one's ever come back. So there are other candidates for this stuff, which, you know, opens the possibility of many more sequels.
You know, there are others, and yeah, nobody's come back from there, but it also made me wonder a bit too, why out of these characters that we see and know or are getting to know, why only Bucky? You know, why is it just that these guys are the laborers, we can always find more workers and they're doing work and we're just going to periodically pluck one out that meets some criteria? Because I don't think there would be nobody in Schmidt's orbit would have any inkling of Bucky's relationship with Steve, right?
No, at this point in the movie, Bucky's just another soldier at this point. Yeah. And I could always sort of assume that he fits some, as you said, some criteria, some combination of youth and vigor and strength and intelligence or what have you. That, I mean, we sadly, the real Nazis had a history of experimenting on people. They just plucked out of the lines and said, you know, you're coming with me because, you know, you look like you'd be a good test subject for this horrible thing I want to do.
Yeah, it might have been something as simple as he was like alphabetical order. You know, the B's were before everybody else on the list.
Yeah, and there's in that ugly, horrific real world, you know, that's that's why we know to do CPR on somebody after a cold water drowning, even if they've been under for as much as an hour, was some of those, you know, that it was a horrible test that they were doing back then, but yeah. going through EMS training and stuff, they stress that you pull somebody out of cold water, or cold water drowning is a very different thing. And, you know, if you have even the slightest doubt, you're going to do compressions until somebody shows up.
Well, it's a real ethical conundrum. I've read articles about, and I can't say I read papers about, but, you know, Nazis did some horrible experiments that did result in some, purely from a scientific, biological standpoint, interesting results. So what is what is your responsibility to use those ethically? Can they be used ethically at all? If they, you know, if they tortured 100 people to death, but learned something interesting, can you use that? It's a real question I'm not even kind of comfortable talking about, but your example is a good one, Hal.
Yeah, I mean, we find lots of things out of horrible times. I mean, pretty much everything we know about burn treatments and penicillin in the treatment of infections in burn wards happened after the terrible Coconut Grove fire in Boston in 1942. And I mean, I think it was something like 160 people died, but they found, you know, the ways of treating most, I mean, the problem with having, you know, like 70 or 80% of your body burned, what treatments worked and what didn't. And one of the key features was using massive amounts of penicillin to fight off the infections, because your the exposure of most of your immune system by peeling off your skin, the important thing was fighting infection, not the fluid loss was one portion of it, but the bigger problem was fighting the infection rather than the fluid loss.
Well, and of course, an example, obvious example, we've all talked about at great length at different times, is the dotted line from the V2 to the moon.
Yeah.
Well, and let's not you know, think Nazis had a monopoly on evil. I mean, we now in our own country, we got the Tuskegee Airmen experiments that you know, left poor men with untreated syphilis just to kind of see what would happen to them, and that's you know, terrible stuff like that happened in our own backyard. So, boy, this took a turn.
Yeah, it sure did. Poor Maybe we Bucky. Should get back. Let's get back to torturing our listeners instead of.
Fortunately, Bucky's going to end up with superpowers instead of untreated syphilis. So,
yeah, lucky Bucky. Yeah.
Next on the untreated syphilis minute.
And I think we can all agree that it's good that this version of Bucky is a fully grown adult instead of doing this with a 12-year-old.
Right. Yeah. The plucky youthful sidekick.
Yeah. So, and really, in the MCU, he's never been the sidekick. I mean, he's always been kind of like Steve was the sidekick.
Right.
It's an interesting turn.
It's really well done, I think. And as a fan of the original comic books, I'm certainly not old enough to have read The Adventures of Captain Bucky in World War II, but we've talked before about how in the comics, the premature death of Bucky's young sidekick that he thought he could have prevented was a big motivating force for Captain America in the 60s and 70s, until the Winter Soldier storyline came along later, which is actually quite similar to what they show in the MCU. But yeah, I mean, people unfamiliar, we're talking the sort of relationship Batman and Robin had. Bucky was Captain America's Robin. That's, in fact, I think explicitly he was created to be Captain America's Robin. And so it's totally different in the comic books than it is in the movies, but I think it really works in the movies of having Steve and Bucky be, you know, roughly contemporaneous friends. They're the same age, I suppose, and have, at least at the start of the movie, Bucky be the more, you know, the superior, the more aggressive part of the duo. I think that's terrific, because it gives them that twist to play then when Steve all of a sudden becomes the more capable, the more stronger, the, you know, the better soldier kind of thing.
It's impossible to imagine it in the film wise. It's impossible to imagine it playing out any other way.
Yeah, I don't think it could have. I think they were real smart when they made this change. I don't generally like change for its own sake, but that's not what this is. I think maturing up Bucky for the films made sense for the stories they wanted to tell, and gave them a lot of fuel for later fires.
Yeah, absolutely.
And didn't have to worry about any like Frederick Wortham popping out of the woodwork with Brian, I'm sure you know who Frederick Wortham is.
I do. Yeah. Seduction of the Innocent.
Exactly. Yeah.
And there we go.
It's and I mean, there having a minor sidekick probably isn't a good idea in any of these situations. Just it's, and we've talked about this before about having an easy hostage there, but it took a lot of explaining in the books and movies. Why is this grown man with no, you know, female presence in the house hanging around with this young boy? So
yeah, what exactly is a ward?
But yeah,
Frederick Wortham explicitly called that out. Frederick Wortham wrote a book called Seduction of the Innocent in the 50s, which said comic books are evil and they're warping the minds of children. And it really caused a crash in the comic book industry. But one of the things he banged on, oh, Jesus, that's the wrong word. One of the things he really pushed strongly was this idea that, you know, for example, Batman and Robin were in a, you know, homosexual relationship and things like that. When from a editorial point of view, the whole point of Robin and Bucky was to give young kids someone to identify with. If you couldn't identify with Batman, you could identify with Robin. And if you can't identify with growing up Captain America, you can identify with it being his young pal who accompanies on these adventures. And I don't actually know if that was ever true. Like, I remember when I was reading comics, I had no trouble identifying with the grown-up heroes. But I get it. I get why they did that, what they were going for. But it was such a more innocent time. And, you know, even in the 60s, in the Adam West Batman series, that's why Aunt Harriet's there.
Yeah.
They created the character of Aunt Harriet. Aunt Harriet didn't exist in the comics. They created Aunt Harriet for the TV show, so you didn't have these two guys living in this big house with their butler.
Yeah. And the other situation is that you have to, if you decide that you don't really want to have a youthful ward in your circle of friends of your superhero or of your comic book hero, the choices that you have are to forget about them, retcon them, or kill them off. And I mean, there's
or grow them,
or mature them. That's right. But usually the fastest way and the way that's going to generate the most, you know, hate mail is kill them off. I mean, you're gonna. I keep thinking about. This is more of comic strip than comic book, but Terry and the Pirates with Raven Sherman in, she wasn't exactly a sidekick, but she's more like, she was in Terry's circle of friends. And she got killed off just, I may be getting thrown through there, just after World War II began. And other than the outbreak of World War II and the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor, the next big thing in the papers at the time, people were upset. Why did you kill off Raven? And it's amazing how people, like you said, they'll identify with certain characters. And killing off Raven was like, well, the women that read Terry and the Pirates were, you know, wait, that was my character. That was me. So, It must be difficult editorial decisions that you're getting rid of a piece of IP.
So I'm trying to think, as we're talking about this stuff, of you know, more recent examples of you know, inserting a younger character, you know, with the idea that you know, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, this is the proxy for the younger viewers, the younger readers. So the first one that's relatively recent, only 30 years old, comes to my mind would be Wesley Crusher on The Next Generation. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I was trying to think, you know, what others have we seen since then? Or have
it's been in the comic books, there's been a sort of interesting evolution, because over the years, in the early years of Marvel, time passed more or less in real time, but that couldn't be maintained. But for example, Spider-Man started out in high school, he went to college, he graduated from college, he married Mary Jane. And so they said, well, what we've lost here is we've lost the young Spider-Man that people used to identify with. So they created a character called Miles Morales, who also had Spider-Man powers. They did not a similar thing, but this happened with The Flash when Barry Allen, The Flash that we all grew up with in the 60s, died in a heroic fashion. They replaced him with the hero who was formerly Kid Flash became The Flash. Wally West became The Flash. So there's this kind of, tradition of promotion.
Yeah, or passing the torch.
Passing the torch. And it's been applied many times that, you know, when Batman's time comes, and Batman's time will never come, but when its time comes, he'll be replaced by Dick Grayson, the former Robin, will become the new Batman kind of thing. Like the Phantom has been through, I forget how many incarnations of the Phantom, but each Phantom, like the Dread Pirate Roberts, passes it down to his, you know, eldest son. I think one of the plots of the recent Phantom is, what if it's a daughter? But, you know, there have been Phantoms since the 1700s, and there's always, you know, the new person who... makes everyone think the Phantom is immortal. So, yeah, and Ms. Marvel's another one in the Marvel universe in the MCU. Yeah. Ms. Marvel's I don't know how old she is, but she's a high school kid,
a high school teenager, yeah.
Who gets superpowers and you know, she's going to join the Avengers and things like that. So, there's always a churn. There's a churn where characters age out of where they were created and new characters kind of emerge to take their place in the youth, you know, the youth identification.
Well, I think the Spider-Man one's an especially interesting example, just because him as a, maybe not as a child, but as a, you know, as a high school student and stuff, that's such compelling storytelling.
Yeah,
and, you know, you didn't, it's not like you had a, you know, grown up adult Spider-Man and then here comes Peter Parker as kid Spidey or something that you're then gonna, you know, identify with. It's like the nature of the character is interesting because he's just a kid in high school and then, you know, trying to make his way after he graduates and all those sorts of things. But yeah, that idea that he can only get so old before you have to do something to reset.
Yeah, even like in our previous venue of the Rocketeer has been reevaluated as the granddaughter of Cliff Secord getting a rocket pack and learning what to do. You know, the show itself is aimed specifically at, you know, 5 through 10 year olds, but still the concept is there's a legacy here. There's a, you know, the 1930s Rocketeer is the grandfather of the current Rocketeer, and she's just a little girl and she's still trying to learn, what am I supposed to do? How, you know, I'm a, because I have this jetpack, I should be a hero and I have to save the town that I live in. So it, you know, it's fascinating that you have, you know, all of these intellectual properties. I guess you have to sit back and say to yourself, how do I keep this going in a different age?
Well, you know, they did the same thing with the Ghostbusters. All the new Ghostbusters, the last two movies are, well, not all of them, but, you know, they're the children of the old Ghostbusters.
Right. Yeah. So it's, right. I mean, if they ever make a Stranger Things sequel, it'll be their kids from the 80s into the 21st century.
Before we leave this minute.
Yes.
And I don't mean to short circuit this discussion, but I just had wondered if you had any comment on what a poorly lit factory/prison this facility is.
Yeah.
All the lighting seems to be coming from natural moonlight filtering through these windows 40 stories high.
Exactly.
Don't these, you know, they got all this Hydra blue glowing technology. Can't they turn some of that into like lamps?
I'm impressed by Red Skull's Vidicon tubes that can pick up on just a few, you know, a few pixels, photons of light bouncing off of these all, you know, they're all wearing dark brown uniforms or khaki or olive green. And he can see everything going on in all the... in all the hallways. His night vision is amazing for 1940s technology.
It's really good. Good tech for the 40s. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always kind of assumed that, at least in the prison portion of this, well, this is after Lights Out, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving them too much benefit of the doubt. But as you said, Brian, before we do leave this minute, we've got to at least acknowledge, you know, Schmidt watching all this stuff on with his amazing night vision and things in yet another really cool control room.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
So many
dials and gauges and CRTs wrapping all the way around. And
everything in German. I mean, that's how you know it's quality.
That's,
you know,
right.
Another nod to the art director and the set designers and the props people. This movie just has it all going on in spades. They put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, the equipment isn't good unless you've got a slash through your 7. So it's really, really top notch work. You know, kudos to Dr. Zola. Wow.
What's interesting is that so I just looked it up. The one of the monitors that we, when you see a close up of it, when he's watching what's going on, the manufacturer plate on is Uber Vacuum. And I just did a quick look up at that because I I know Uber in German is over. So I'm assuming this is Overwatch, overwatching, something like that. But there's actually at least one company that sells security cameras in South Africa with that name.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So
free advertising.
Who knows? Yeah. Life imitating art or the other way around.
Yeah, you need to look up when that company was incorporated, before or after.
Exactly.
The
movie. Yes, if it was
as seen in Captain America.
Yeah, late 2011.
Yeah, if you turn the them off, does it still have a blue glow to it, or just
right? Like, and wow. Certainly, there's nothing at all even remotely unsettling about South African security systems and closed circuit cameras and things. It's fine.
Wow. Well, this has been definitely a solid minute, and more to come. I mean, there's so much that's going to be going on in the next five or six shows. So please stay tuned. This is going to be something. But we do want to thank you for being a part of our show. If you'd like to continue the conversation, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, Captain America Minute listeners base over on Facebook. If you do like the show, please don't forget to subscribe. I know I ask you this on every show, but if you could please subscribe, leave a like at whatever podcast streaming service where you found this episode. It really helps people find our show. And I've been looking at our numbers have been going up a lot lately. So I think people are actually following along at the end of the show to do this. So thank you very much.
And some of them are making fondue. Thank goodness.
Yeah, and they're making fondue. So get out your toast and your chocolate and just bring up those that Google review. We would really appreciate it. Also, please check out our big website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And don't forget, be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.